Hey, Mason, I really need a good gift for my generic loved one. Any ideas?
Oh, yeah, Andrew. I have the gift they need. If you sign up for GoDaddy's Economy Blogcast package, you'll receive 1 gig of disk space, 100 gigs of bandwidth, recording tools, and much more.
Whoa, with all those features, I'd guess that kind of package will run me at least $20 a month and be plastered with ads.
You're wrong, Andrew. The Blogcast Economy package is just $4.49 a month for 12 months.
That's a deal, and a perfect way to get your own website, blog, or podcast started.
Ooh, yeah, that is a deal. Plus, enter code MUGGLE when you check out. Save an additional 10% on any order. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
Because MuggleCast is amazing. This is MuggleCast episode 138 for March 25th, 2008.
All right, we're coming off our big interview this week with Jim Dale. Big success, right, Micah?
Yeah, it was a really good interview.
And I'm just going to bet and say that best interview ever with an audiobook narrator after Deathly Hallows.
It's a safe bet.
Hands down.
I'm going to bet and I'm going to say that we'll be using that intro on all of our shows from now on.
It was a lot of fun. We're getting a lot of good feedback from it. So, great success.
Good job.
Yeah.
High five.
But hey, we got another big show this week, so I don't think we should waste any time. Also, because I'm out of jokes, so we got some rebuttals, we got some voicemails, we got some Muggle Mail and Make the Connection, all the good stuff. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
And I'm Micah B.
MuggleCast special guest news anchor Ash Jackson is in the MuggleCast News Center with last week's top Harry Potter news stories. Hey, Ash.
Thanks, and welcome to the MuggleCast News for March 25th, 2008.
We've got interviews, curses, and movies cut in half. If the weekly Harry Potter news is a roller coaster, this week is the part where you're roaring downhill at a mile a minute, screaming at the top of your lungs. I'm Ash Jackson. Let's get to it. An interview with J.K. Rowling was recently published by an Edinburgh student newspaper. The interview, however, was much more like a friendly conversation. The subject of the interview flows freely from discussing the strong support and dissent that Jo has received over the years as a result of writing her Harry Potter books to the future life beyond the series. All the while, however, it's evident that Jo is still as down-to-earth as any world-famous person can be. In the interview, she jokes that Dumbledore's sexuality is a non-issue because, as she says, it's Dumbledore, for God's sake. There are 20 things that are relevant to the story before his sexuality. Later, while discussing her current and future writing projects, Jo exclaims that, though it is not currently on her schedule, she has always wanted to write a novel about a stand-up comedian. The full text of the interview can be found on the MuggleNet website. And lastly, from the AustralianNews.com, the suggestion that the sixth film is cursed. Citing storm damage to movie sets, death threats from stalkers, and hijinks in Surrey involving special effects fog and streakers, the article suggests that the actors feel the movie has been jinxed, though no direct sources are provided. This is Ash Jackson, thanking you for the chance to present the Harry Potter news for the week of March 25th, 2008. And now, back to your regularly scheduled MuggleCast.
All right, great job, Ash.
You're welcome.
And,
I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
Dude, stepping on toes.
You didn't do that in rehearsal.
Oh, my God.
That wasn't planned. Micah, you're going to have to get back into the swing of things. It's been like, it's going to be like a month.
Yeah, it's going to be quite a while since I've done the news. You started it off, right? I think a couple episodes ago.
I did it because you were being lazy one night and didn't want to do it when I needed it. And
that's your take on it, okay.
I think Micah has a completely different side of the story, Andrew.
Yeah, that involved work. But hey, you know, Andrew's sounds
a
little
bit
better.
I was working, yeah. But I had time to record it.
Yeah, you did. But I figured, you know, after how many consecutive weeks of doing the news, I could let Andrew give it a shot.
Oh, thanks. You're so nice. It was fun, though. I had fun imitating, doing a cheap impersonation of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I call it cheap because if I say an impersonation, people will say, that was the worst impression ever. But it was good.
It came close to being the worst ever, but...
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I do a worse one, so I give up.
Ben is pretty good. Didn't he do it once?
Ben does
or
every...
twice or 300 times.
Ben always... What people don't know is when we do the recorded shows, when Ben used to come on the recorded shows... When I used to say, all right, thanks, Micah. Oh, no. Whenever I introed you, I would go, and now Micah Tannenbaum with the news. Ben would always go, thanks, Andrew. And but I would always cut it
and
out.
And I was expecting on the live show, too. I thought he was going to throw it in there, but he didn't.
He didn't, no. If I introed the news, I'm sure it would have happened. But anyway, let's move on to some news. Only one thing we wanted to really talk about this week. New interview with David Heyman on the Split. This actually came out right after our live show, and this was with Empire Online, I believe. A nice lengthy interview with David Heyman. They're really opening up. I guess they just want a lot of press for this. But did you guys read this interview? It had some interesting information in it.
Yeah, no, I just actually read it right before we started recording.
I remember recording something about this last week, right? I mean,
yeah, the lost episode of MuggleCast. Yeah. No, the lost episode of MuggleCast, but we'll pretend like we didn't do that.
Oh, okay.
One interesting question asked to David was, did you get as far as trying to put a script together that would get everything into one film, or did it become obvious in discussions that it would work? And David Heyman's answer, which is very interesting, is, no, it all came down to discussions. We just thought, how are we going to approach this? Is this going to be a 4.5-hour film? That's probably what it would have been. Really? Really? And David goes on to say that... The one of their main concerns was children, losing the interest of children. And I guess that makes sense, right? You don't want to lose the interest of kids, but would they actually have made a 4.5-hour film all in one?
I question that, but again, it was in such preliminary discussion that no, they weren't going to, because when it came time to really make the decision, they decided to split it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with Eric on that. But truthfully, if they were making a 4.5-hour film, it would have been cut down to 3 hours maximum.
Yeah, I really don't think that.
Yeah.
And in editing. And truthfully, you know, I have mixed feelings about the Split. One, I'm kind of excited at the same that they're going to tell the story a little bit. I feel a little bit more time on it like they should for, you know, like Order of the Phoenix, biggest book, shortest movie. But at the same time, it's going to be the odd movie out. Like, you know, if you watch all the movies, they all have a pacing. And I'm wondering if what they're going to do with the movie to really, like, are they going to flesh stuff out that they would, you know, are they still going to cut the same amount of stuff and just kind of flesh certain things out?
Yeah.
But I'm not sure, you know.
I don't know. It's interesting.
We'll see. David, yeah. I'm excited.
David also reiterates that they want it to be two separate films. You know, each contain two separate plots. And actually, in Muggle Mail this week, we do have a couple interesting ideas. Actually, just one interesting idea. And I think there might be one voicemail about it. But another question David asks is, obviously there are people who will think that the decision to make two films is driven by a desire to make twice as much money. What do you say to that? And clearly, I think they're already sort of getting fed up with this question. Heyman says, the process went like this. The studio said to us, the filmmakers, you decide what is best for the story. Alan Horn, the president of Warner Brothers, and Jeff Robinov, Warner Brothers' head of production, particularly Alan Horn, are complete Potter fans. He loves the franchise, loves the books, loves the films, and appreciates their importance to Warner Brothers on many levels. money. But above all else, he is a fan, and he said he did not want to compromise the creative integrity of the films. He wants to end the series in the right way. He's been very generous in the resources they're given, but also in the freedom they've given us on each film. He very clearly said that Steve Clovis, myself, David Yates should make the decision, and he would support that. I don't know. So what this is basically saying was the decision to split it into two films didn't come from high up. He said, you decide, well, maybe this isn't a definitive explanation, but what he did say was, you decide what is best for the story. What do you guys think about this? I mean,
well, they're not going to say, yes, we're going to love how much money we're going to get out of Milgen, you know. But I think that it was really generous of him to have explained a little bit of the process that, you know, this is – I think it's kind of irrelevant if they are even happy about how much extra money, you know, that they're going to get out of it. I think it would be the right thing to do. Maybe it would have been the right thing to do a few movies ago too. But, you know, needless to say, they're doing it now. And I think the Warner Brothers guy, he says that the people high up really appreciate the contribution that Harry Potter makes to the series. To me, that sounds kind of like a money thing. And, and so that, you know, kind of think that, that kind of...
Okay.
I really think it's all about money.
I don't.
No.
Why not, Mikey?
Well, again, like, the first part, it's like, it came down to discussions, you know. When they approach the film, like, again, I'm sure they have approached every film this way. When you flesh it out, it's probably, you know, like, the books are pretty hefty books. Except for maybe, like, the first two, or maybe the first three after that. They're pretty big in the sense of, like, you can get a pretty long film out of it. Andrew, you gonna keep with the music, really?
I'm not convinced.
Okay. Not convinced. But really, I can see it's now, it's like Harry Potter as a film, as a series, has earned its dues. Basically, they can do whatever, like the filmmakers kind of much have the pull to go, you know, we can do whatever we want for the last two. And Warner Brothers is gonna back them on it. And truthfully, you know, I can believe it where it said, you know, Jeff Robinoff, it was saying, you know, hey, let's go ahead and give the fans, you know, because remember, I've met, you know, David Heyman, and so have you, Andrew, and he seems like a really down to earth person.
Yeah.
You know, he's gone to MuggleNet. It's like, I would say he's very in touch with what the fans want, and truthfully, one of the biggest complaints with all the films, which we've always complained about, is it's not true enough to the book.
I do agree with that.
And again, but, when they're discussing it in this discussion process, like, if they want to do the last book, like, think about how much, you know, yes, every Potter book we've always kind of put emphasis on, and I wasn't part of you guys when, you know, Half-Blood Prince came out, but like Deathly Hallows, we put so much emphasis on it, and that's because one, it was the last one.
Yeah,
that's the same thing for them when it comes to movie making. It's a couple years later, but you have to go. Okay, well, the fans really wanted, you know, they put so much effort into reading the series all the way through. Younger kids are into it. Adults are into it. All their complaints are always about the book, you know, the movies don't follow the books close enough. If we're trying to do the last film right for them so that they have something to go out on that they're happy with, that they can treasure.
I do agree with that.
It's too long. And so it makes sense they're doing two separate movies. What I do like is that they're just kind of like some other movies that are released. They're releasing them relatively close to each other. They're like, what, 6 months apart is what they said?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's 6 months apart. Difference. So this is what's going to happen. The first film is not going to be out on DVD yet.
It will. They didn't we read somewhere that they are going to do that?
Are they going to release it on DVD?
Because six
months could be the life of a film in the theater.
Yeah. See, we did discuss this on the live show. But I'm trying to remember, Micah. Was there some sort of confirmation or? Was it?
Yeah, I thought I remember us talking about the fact that they were going to release the first DVD.
We did.
Before
That's what we talked about.
The second movie came out.
But see, it would make sense that they do that. I mean, why wouldn't they? Like,
well, you know, there's
take
numbers
advantage of the Easter, season, you know, when parents give their kids gifts, and I guess it would be too close to the holiday. You wouldn't be able to get it out for Christmas. I just think that. They know if they put out the first one, it'll sell like crazy. They know if they put out the second one alone, it'll sell like crazy. They know if they put them together, it would sell like crazy. So,
no, if you do all three, they're going to sell like crazy three times. But
And then along comes the complete collection, all eight movies together. There's another thing.
I wanted to go back to what Mikey was saying before about David Heyman. I don't really think it's about David Heyman. And
no, it's not.
It's about Alan Horn, and it's about Jeff Robinov. You know,
and all the higher ups.
All the higher ups. At the end of the day, unfortunately, as much as they like Harry Potter, it's about how much money are they bringing in. And people
who
are arguing the fact that, you know, Deathly Hallows, if it's going to be a 3-hour movie, we're not going to get everything into it, are the same people who are now turning around and arguing that, well, they split the film into two because they want to make more money. So it's kind of like a no-win situation for some of these people out there. You can't make the argument both ways. Either you're going to suck it up and deal with a 3-hour movie and, you know, not be upset that you only had to pay once to go to the theaters, or you're just going to have to deal with the fact that you're going to have to pay twice to go and know that as a Harry Potter fan, you're going to get almost everything, you know, in these two films.
Right. And yeah.
I'll tell you what. Warner Brothers was gloating months ago that the Harry Potter series was the top-earning franchise of all time. I'm sure this eighth movie, that could have played a little role. They want a little extra buffer to hang on to that franchise thing.
What, for quarterly? They want to have at least one more quarter of profit, you know?
Right, for Harry Potter. Yeah. That's icing on the cake. A whole additional movie. That's going to... Eight movies, like, Bond will never beat them, ever.
Yeah, Star Wars.
Bond held the previous record, for anyone who doesn't know. You know, it's just...
Yeah, but no, but I agree. But truthfully, you know, I can see where it came down to. The people up above said, all right, the books were seven books. We knew going into seven. And truthfully, if the filmmakers wanted, you know, we would... I'm sure there was no pressure to split it into two. And I'm taking that with a very grain of salt.
I don't think it was either. I would agree.
But they may have suggested, do you guys want to split it to give it, you know, longer like you guys want? We'll give you, you know, I've been looking at the budget. The budget for each Harry Potter movie, it started out at $125 million to $150 million. Their budget hasn't gone much up. They threw, you know, a lot of money into this from the very beginning. And truthfully,
I mean, there's only so much
see...
you can use, though, at the same time. I mean, if they up the budget, what are they going to do with the money? You know,
well, no, but it comes with...
Special effects costs so much.
Well, special effects cost a lot of money. Plus, advertising still costs a lot of money.
Oh, they don't need advertising for this film.
The funny thing is they don't, but they invest in it like crazy. So.
Well, they're going to have
to. What I'm thinking is if they were going to do one movie and it was really long and, you know, they would be spending that much more money to have that many more shooting days to shoot all the scenes that aren't going to get cut because they're not breaking it down into a 2.5-hour movie. So they're spending all this money on the locations and the shots and doing everything anyway, making this long movie. They're not going to see the turnaround then in ticket sales because people will only have one movie to go to see. If they break it into two movies, a brilliant idea, and not just this will make them greedy, but, you know, a good idea then would be to supplement all these extra days of shooting by making it two movies, and that kind of rewards everyone.
One thing that is interesting that I didn't really think about was that you need Creature and Dobby in this movie, and we've heard in the past that house elves are very expensive to create. I mean, for obvious reasons, like Mikey was saying, all the additional work, man hours you need to create these made up characters. So. Yeah, I imagine the budget would have to go up a little bit considering you got to invest some money in Dobby.
And the big dragon and the dragon they're all riding on.
Right.
You know, there's,
right.
And goblins. And, you know, yes, goblins are actors, but a lot of it is still CG. There's so much.
And don't forget the end scene, too. I mean, you have house elves in that final scene in the battle against Voldemort. So. It's not just creatures.
And a giant attacking the castle.
Yeah. Multiple
giants.
Don't forget
about that either. Expensive. Well, multiple, right?
So let's move on. Yeah, but again,
guys,
this movie's got a lot of stuff, and I'm glad they're giving it the amount of time and money it deserves to actually do the story properly.
Mm-hmm. Eric, final word on this?
Sorry, my brain's turned to mush.
Let's move on.
Just one announcement this week. We want to continue the... encourage everyone to vote for us on Podcast Alley. We've been owning the charts this month, and I just want to encourage everyone, you know, just because it's MuggleCast March doesn't mean you don't have to make us number one next month. You know, MuggleCast Maple.
No,
MuggleCast May.
I thought it was
MuggleCast Moon.
I thought it was Andrew April. You know, for you, we're doing
Andrew
you.
April. That's
we're
a good
voting
point.
For and Andrew then, April. And then Mikey May.
Yeah. Mikey May.
Yeah.
Don't forget to vote on Easter Eric and then...
Which is this Sunday.
Wow. Yeah, it's Sunday. Vote today.
And Monday, Matt, you know. Come on, guys.
So vote every day. That's what we're trying to say. Thanks, everyone who's helping us out there. Let's get into some Muggle Mail this week.
Okay, first Muggle Mail comes from Emily, age 16, from Dallas, Texas. The subject is frustrated. Sup, MuggleCasters! ! G. Don't sound too frustrated. Thanks for an awesome MuggleCast last week, but there was one moment where I kind of wish I would knock some sense into you guys. There were definitely painted portraits in 1000 AD. Promise, no fingers crossed. I've been to tons of art museums in Europe. The Uffizi, the Louvre, and the London Institute all have a medieval section where there are many paintings. Although most of these are not portraits, some are, so your point as to why the early Hogwarts founders weren't portrayed in paintings is kind of... wrong. Joe made a boo-boo here, ladies and gents. Wow, that all sounded offensive. Sorry about that. Taking a course in art history makes me a teensy bit defensive when it comes to history and art. Anyways, peace and pickles. Emily, XXX.
I can't remember who said this last week, but...
I think this goes way back, though.
It was 2 weeks
ago,
I think it was.
And you were the only one there, or unless Mikey was,
too. No, I was there. I was there. Actually, no. Yeah, yes. They've had artworks, you know, they've had artwork throughout history, you know.
See, I agree with this girl. I think it's stupid that whoever was saying it... Mikey, was it you?
No, it might have been me, but I know what she's talking about.
It may have been.
It may have been, and I'm going to say, you know, I'm going to say yes, it was me. I probably was, but truthfully, you know, yes, there's been art throughout history. You can go back to cave paintings that are considered art and, you know, and replicas and remains of that, but at the time period, up to about, you know, 1400, painting really wasn't, you know, available to a lot of people in the sense that now, you know, yes, there's definitely art museums throughout Europe. I've been to the Louvre. I've been to a lot of different places, but it was very expensive. And I remember... I'm trying to remember, what was it? Where did they talk about Hogwarts? Someone talked about the beginning of Hogwarts, where it was like...
Well, the debate was the question was, it was a voicemail question, why aren't there any paintings, portraits of the founders? And I think Mikey, your example makes enough sense. I thought our debate, though, was... You know what? Because I think like Laura was saying, because the magic was there, and I was like, "What? Of course the magic was there." It's like,
yeah,
they don't
it's
invent
like learning
the magic
though.
Later.
It's like, yeah, I'm sure they had paintings, but probably not like talking paintings. You know,
well, dude, Eric. No, Mikey. What you're saying about it being not, you know, expensive and all that stuff.
These weren't
just four average Joes. These were the four greatest witches and wizards of their time. I think it's a serious question. It is the only school in England. As well. So if anybody gets art supplies, you know, if they're kind of running out of, you know, paint in the entire country, I mean, Hogwarts would have it.
Why is Hogwarts the only school in England?
I mean, the only wizarding school? Is it?
Well, remember, at the time that they made it, this was the first time they were trying. They were the four, you know, the best, you know, the strongest wizards and witches in the land. You know, there are still lots and lots of people learning on their own with families. You know, I mean, you don't have to go to Hogwarts to become a wizard. I mean, you can be taught at home.
The next one comes from Jessica Thompson, 21, of Reading, England, and talking about Bob Hoskins. She says, "Hey guys, I'm still loving the show, and will be very sorry to see the weekly podcast come to an end. Even though I think it's probably the right decision, I'll miss my MuggleCast Monday morning so much. Thanks for all the hard work that you've put in over the years. We all appreciate it, and hope you've had as much fun making them as we have listening. Just thought that you might be interested to know that the interview with Bob Hoskins you refer to in episode 135 was an episode on BBC's Friday Night with Jonathan Ross. I don't remember the date it aired, but it was the same episode as his interview with Joe just before Deathly Hallows came out. It was absolutely hilarious and well worth a look. I watched it myself on YouTube just a few weeks ago, so I'm sure you'll still be able to find it out there somewhere. Keep up the great work, Jessica."
Okay, good. Yay. I had, at the live podcast in London, somebody had said that she saw an interview with Bob Hoskins that said there was a character in DH reserved for him in the movie because he was asked why he didn't portray any earlier roles. Anyway, this girl has given us the reference by which I can go find it on YouTube, the interview with Bob Hoskins. We speculated so whether
Yeah. It had been posted on MuggleNet actually a little while back, and there was that interaction between the two of them. I remember watching it, and I guess you guys had discussed on 135 who you thought he would play.
Yeah.
Well, Eric was suggesting that it would be
Zeno.
That he would play
Mr. Lovegood.
Right, Mr. Lovegood. So
potentially. I don't know. Because I always thought him as a Slughorn guy.
Next email comes from Mary V, 14 of Missouri. She writes, I have a bit of a rebuttal for you. In last week's episode, 135, one of you, I think it was Andrew, said that the Ministry monitors almost everything in discussing the taboo on Voldemort's name. My rebuttal for all you is this. If the Ministry can monitor spoken magical words, i.e. the taboo, then how come the Ministry doesn't monitor unforgivable curses? And if the Ministry does monitor them, how come they didn't respond when Voldemort used the Cruciatus curse on Harry in the graveyard in Goblet of Fire? Unforgivables performed by non-dark wizards during times when Voldemort is not in power seems like a pretty serious offense, like in Azkaban. So it would make sense the Ministry would want to monitor their use. Something doesn't seem to add up here. Love the show, Mary V. I think it's one of those things. It's like I made this example before. It's like it's like the question, why don't you see them use the bathroom? It's just because. Just because if they did, it would there's no proper explanation for it. It just can't happen. And in this example, he has to use the Cruciatus curse. There can't always be a consequence for everything Harry does. I just think there's no room in the plot. What do you guys think?
I think also, well, it would be kind of too late, wouldn't it? I mean, if you're monitoring who, you know, oh, there's a taboo on someone who cries. Yeah, if you are trying to track someone who uses an unforgivable curse, you know, notably a BAMF, you're not going to want to, you know, go to the scene of the crime as it happened unless you're, you know, I mean, the R's, I guess the R's could make their living like that. I mean, maybe, but I think you guys are right. It's just one of those things that's kind of, you know, a moot point or a moot kind of concern that they would do this because,
And at the same time, like, maybe they did track it. Again, there's so much of the story that we can't even follow. Maybe they did track it, but at the same time, that's when, you know, Dumbledore is saying that Voldemort is back. And, you know, again, it's politics. They turned a blind eye to all the signs and everything that was happening. So they could have seen it, but they said, nope, we didn't catch that.
Micah?
No, I agree with pretty much everything that's been said. I mean, you can also go earlier in this book when fake Moody / Barty Crouch Jr. uses the unforgivable curses in the classroom. I mean, five or six Aurors didn't pop up in Hogwarts because there were unforgivable curses that were being taught. So I don't really think that it's something that, you know, okay, Voldemort's name is automatically said and these people show up. It's not the same with the unforgivable curses where one is done and then automatically, you know, all these people are going to start popping up. It just wouldn't make any sense. That doesn't mean that they can't trace them, and like you were saying before, they wouldn't be further investigated, but I don't think right when it happens, like Eric was saying, if this guy is some, you know, BAMF, you know, they're not going to go chasing right after them and show up, you know, right on the scene. I think they would do some investigative work.
Next rebuttal from Brandy, age 26 of Indiana. Hi, MuggleCast. Love the show. You guys are great. Just wanted to make a suggestion for the Deathly Hallows split. I think a nice place for the split would be right after meeting with Xenophilius Lovegood, but right before saying the name Voldemort and getting captured. That way they could end right after a large action sequence and then begin with the next movie right before another big action sequence, i.e. Malfoy Manor. Just a thought. Thanks.
I like that a lot.
I agree with it. I think, Andrew, you and I were talking about when we were thinking of which chapters to do for Chapter by Chapter this week, whether or not to do two or one. I had suggested that, well, maybe we should only do one this week because it's kind of a long chapter, but it's also the chapter that precludes sort of the second half of the novel, as it were, because they've, at the end of it, at the end of the chapter, Deathly Hallows, they have said Voldemort, and there's people outside the tent. I think it's such a great kind of, it would be perfect for the movie split. What do you guys think?
Or even taking Brandy's idea and just going a little further, how about now that we already know that the taboo, there is that taboo when you say Voldemort, what if they say Voldemort And then it just begins to transition into the next chapter, but it doesn't exactly. We hear them like suddenly coming after the trio or something. Like that would be a cliffhanger when you're like, oh my God, who's there for Voldemort, or who's there for the trio and what's going
to
happen?
Well, yeah, I agree with that. Just probably what we're about to discuss, but
yeah,
I think it'd be really cool if, you know, like Harry starts saying the name Voldemort, you have Hermione scream, Harry, no, and then the scene just goes black. That would be like a great ending to the first movie.
Wasn't it? There's dialogue. There's like, come out. We know you're in there. You know, we're not exactly.
No, but I think it's. Yeah, but I think it's better. You know, sort of hanging off of those words.
I think it would be scarier if you did hear that little bit of dialogue Eric's talking about. Just to hear these very scary voices.
What if it went black and then you heard those as the credits start to roll? That would be scary.
Oh my God, I would cry.
No, there needs to be a score when the credits roll. There needs to be.
It's a Cloverfield style, no music or anything. Oh my gosh.
But you know what though, like if it goes even a step further beyond that, like it could end like so many other movies where it's like it ends on a down note. They got captured. You know, either way, you know, the book in this section, this area we've been talking about and we're talking about today, is the area they're probably going to split it, because it's just kind of like it is the halfway point in like the storytelling and action.
Well, David Heyman listens, so I mean, he's just going to take our ideas.
Come on, Big D.
Come on, David Heyman.
Big D.
His initials are Deathly Hallows.
Huh.
That's true.
Come on, DH. Huh. Help us out here.
Huh.
But, all right, next email. Zach 20 of Philly.
Dude,
Eric and I.
I like this guy. Yeah, I like this guy's point. This guy has a really great point.
I loved your live show about Deathly Hallows splits. Even though I'm a few episodes behind, I still skipped ahead to hear your thoughts on the splits. My comment is on the waiting period, not between part one and two, but between movie 6 and part 1 of movie 7. I originally believed Half-Blood Prince was coming out in November 2008 and the Deathly Hallows was scheduled for summer 2010, not November 2010, because ever since Chamber of Secrets, it's been 16 to 18 months in between movies, not a full 2 years. Well, over 2 years in this case. Well, actually, well, yeah, 2 years. Yeah, sorry. So isn't it a little surprising they're not releasing Deathly Hallows a little earlier? Because to be honest, I can survive a 6-month gap in between parts 1 and 2. However, a 2-year wait between 6 and 7 is pretty long for the Harry Potter franchise. And you know, I wanted to bring this up, and the funny thing is, nobody has really complained about that, have they, Eric?
Okay.
Thanks, Eric.
Yeah. Well, no, you know, I thought about that. But truthfully, you know what's going to happen, though, is they're probably going to be filming the entire thing, like the whole, both parts back to back. And that the extra 6 months is the post-production on it. Truthfully, you know, what's going to happen is, again, editing is going to take place. They're going to edit the first one. Once it gets to a final cut, then the visual effects people are finishing that up. It's going to get finished out. And that last 6 months is where the visual effects are crunching, finishing everything up. For the second one, they're going to be shooting the things back to back on the two, just like they did with The Matrix, just like they did with Pirates of the Caribbean. All of it shot back to back, so that way the between the two, the distribution between the two is 6 months. So that's why it takes a little bit longer.
I agree. I think that's a good point.
You know, there's no faster way to get it out, like get it earlier, because what happens is they're in shooting longer, post-production, everything just doesn't come in, you know. It won't be finished in time to get it out earlier. So, I guess we can move on, because that's kind of how it has to be.
Yeah.
Andrew?
All right, I'll grab... Yeah, what happened to him?
Okay, right, Micah. Anyway, right, it's just me and Micah here.
It's the M&M show.
Yeah, yes, it is. I think Eric and Andrew are probably off talking on their own without us.
Yeah, they just left us alone. I bet Andrew went to get a drink or something. He thinks that he's, you know, cool enough.
No, sorry.
Oh, hey, here's Andrew's back.
There he is.
All right.
I'm back. I received the
welcome
phone
to
call.
The M&M show, Andrew. You know, Micah and Mikey.
No, he went to go watch. Check out Chakizzi on American Idol.
No,
that's what
I
we want to
care
do.
Less. Sorry, guys. Sorry. But okay, next email.
The last email comes from Terry, who's a boy, 14, of Montreal, Canada. More on the Deathly Hallows split, but focusing on marketing. He says, first of all, I'm pretty happy that there is a split and convinced that it is a better thing to do. A big thanks to you guys for your opinions, which helps me decide it. I think, as you guys have also put to theory, that there will be separate DVDs for each half of the full movie released. The first DVD should come out somewhere around March, since the others have done so similarly. The second DVD should come in October, and a full DVD set containing both halves around the holiday season. Now, I wanted to know from you guys, what would you do? Would you buy them separately, or wait over a year to get the entire DVD set? It's pretty difficult to choose. I myself do not know, and would like to hear your opinion. Thanks a lot. I want you guys to know that your show and site are a really positive thing in my life, and that they are some of the things that are keeping me from truly going insane. Well, that's nice to know. Keep up the great work.
I already thought about this. I've actually thought about this a lot. I am going to buy each movie as they come out on DVD up till mid-2010. Reason for this is chances are I probably won't be able to afford a nice big screen TV to jump to Blu-ray yet. But once the entire big thing comes out, of course, there'll be another reason for me to get my big screen TV and buy the entire thing on Blu-ray along with Star Wars and all my wonderful movies that I have to upgrade to the nice HD versions of.
Well, see, there's actually an example, and I don't mean to go back to what we were talking about before, but all the original Star Wars movies that were sort of digitally remastered, I mean, that was really a revenue-generating idea, wasn't it? I mean, to put them back in theaters with these sort of new scenes.
Special edition? Well, yes and no. It was kind of a... It was a big joke for hardcore Star Wars fans with that, is because the special edition is horrible. Like, they've changed so many little things, and none of the fans of Star Wars really like it, the special edition, much. But what we all recognize is it recognized to George Lucas and Lucasfilm that, yes, there was still a draw for Star Wars, so he can do the prequels. And, yes, the technology had gotten to a point where the prequels can happen to the way he wants them to be. Now, I'm not saying that the prequels 1, 2, and 3 are great. I like the story. I like where it leads to. It kind of wraps a lot of things up that were undiscussed. But it at least showed a few things with that, the special edition release.
So what would you guys do? Let's just go around the table.
I already said what I would do.
Yeah, Mikey said. Micah, what would you... I already said what I'm going to do. I mean, I'll buy it. Like, it'll be tempting. They'll have special features on there, and they'll be doing all these promos that just make you want to buy it, and I'll probably buy it.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, I think I'd probably go as they were released, go and get the DVDs. You know, the first one... for the first part of movie 7 and then the second part of movie 7. I mean, I don't know if I would go all out and then get the movie together, but I guess it all depend upon what you were saying. What are the special features that are going to be available on the 2-disc versus the movies individually?
That's why you buy the together one in Blu-ray, Micah. Get it in the high-def version.
Well, that's the thing that really annoys me. They already have out a complete... Sorcerer's Stone through Order of Phoenix.
That annoys me.
And I'm thinking,
That annoys me. They had it ever since movie 3.
Well, that's revenue generation right there. I'm sorry. That's purely for monetary gain.
What I can see that for is people who are new to the movies. But
I mean, Eric? Yeah, well, I agree with you. And I agree with everyone else, too. I mean, this whole, book by book, same with the books, but to a much lesser point than with the movies. Every new movie comes out, they have this new box set of all the movies. But if there's going to be 7 or 8, just wait or something, But I guess the box set, I mean, you're right, Andrew. For new listeners, for new visitors, it's... It makes sense because the movie store won't have all the old ones that came out 6 or 7 years ago. I mean, it's a fair point, I think.
I like the idea of box sets as they come out. I'm not the one to buy them, but a perfect example is the books. I was not an original Harry Potter fan. I didn't get into it till after Order of the Phoenix. I read a friend's first and second book, and I liked it so much, I went out and bought the 5-book set. After the Phoenix. And I was there for a midnight release of, Half-Blood Prince, but I read all 5 books and I didn't buy 1 book at a time. I ended up buying the 5-book set. So that way I had them all and read them, and then I bought the other 2 books individually.
With me.
It's a great way to jumpstart your collection of them.
Well, I agree. I guess you're right. I mean, I did the same thing with the 4-book set. I borrowed a friend's two and three, and then I just bought the 4-book set the day that Goblet of Fire came out in paperback. Same thing. But I guess with I mean, with DH, I will definitely. I mean, if it comes out in, if it comes out fast enough, and if they're not doing that theatrical release that we were speculating about, whether or not they would bring DH Part 1 back to theaters for the release of DH 2, then I would definitely end up buying the DVD, even if it was just a little DVD. But one thing they can't go wrong on, I really want commentary from the trio. I really don't think that they could do wrong if they did that. If the DVD had that, I would buy it.
Of course. Of course, yeah. Well, let's move along now. I think we've done all these emails justice. We're already pretty far into the show. This week, we're going to get back on track with chapter by chapter. As we said earlier, we're going to do chapter 22, The Deathly Hallows. Of course.
Yay!
Yay!
The title chapter. I guess that's what you call it, right? When the
Yeah, title chapter, self-titled, something like that. I mean,
yeah, because like with songs, they'll do like self-titled album. Well, yeah. That's for the name of the artist.
That's for the name of the artist. But I understand what you're saying. I can't think of it either.
Yeah. But, well, luckily that's not what this show is about. It's about this wonderful chapter. Pretty long chapter, too. I mean, a short summary of this is basically they discovered the Deathly Hallows in the chapter prior. But in this one, Harry is making the realization that this is what he needs to become the master of death, and this is what he needs to kill Voldemort.
He also discovers that he already has 2 out of 3 of them and has most of his life.
Yeah. And what annoys me about reading this chapter after having already read the book is that you know the answer to opening up the snitch, but it's like, you know, he's sitting there pondering it like he's completely confused. He doesn't know how to do it.
Well, it's kind of stupid, actually, how the snitch eventually opens. But, I mean, it basically says, I open at the close of the novel. It's like, I'm not going to open till that battle. Not going to do it. Sorry, dude.
Yeah.
Sorry, dude. Not going to do it. Until you absolutely want to die and stuff, no, not going to happen. Until page, I will not open. What it really said is I'm not going to open till page 600 and, you know, 37. That's really what it said. And...
Okay, the first thing we want to discuss today is Hermione casting all those spells immediately after they arrive at the new place. You know, the protective ones, what were they?
What I mean by that is when I posted these notes in 2 weeks ago to 2 weeks show, I expected someone to go back to the beginning of the chapter and write down the incantations.
Oh, what they were. Oh,
sorry.
Okay.
But this is just standard for Hermione, really. I mean,
yeah.
She's been doing this for all of them. The spells are, I actually do have it right here. It's Protego, Totalum, Salvio, Hexia, Cave, in
Cave Inimicum.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. So, anyway, I mean, I guess the whole basic deal is it's pretty cool. You can just arrive in any place and all of a sudden start casting all these protective charms and stuff. So I think it's pretty cool.
And then as we were discussing a couple weeks ago, I guess it was, who was it? Was it Hermione who said it? Or... we don't need another Godric's Hollow or something.
Yeah, well, she had said that, or Harry, Hermione or Harry had said that, but then here she goes, why did we go there? Harry, you were right. It was Godric's Hollow all over again. You know, sheesh. Well, what a way to think of it in hindsight, that they've had another outing that is just like Godric's Hollow, where they aren't prepared and they get in over their own heads and then somehow escape.
But that's the reality, though, of the entire book.
Right,
I mean, anywhere that they go, it's going to be problematic whether they're with people who are on their side or people who aren't on their side. It's, you know, they're going to encounter confrontation no matter where they go.
Yeah.
It's just bound to happen.
So you're saying it's a habit of the, you know, I mean, it's a problem with the way the world is, you know, the way the world is set in this book?
At the time, yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, they're at war. I mean, he's, you know... what do they call him again? Something number one.
Undesirable,
I mean,
number one.
Yeah. So if he's that person, naturally, wherever he's going, there's going to be problems. And you look at the fact Xenophilius Lovegood, I mean, they've never really encountered the guy before prior to the wedding. So he's not like the most reliable person in the world. I wouldn't just walk through the door and say, hey, how's it going?
Hey,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the Fonz, like, hey, you welcome me in here, you know.
But, like, they need all this. That's what I'm saying. Like,
there's no reason to complain. There's a huge risk with whatever they do, but they know that they have to take the risks. They're just lucky that it ended up working out okay.
So you wouldn't,
they
you wouldn't
all three of them left.
You wouldn't complain that they don't think things out before they go. You think that? I mean,
oh no, no, I completely agree with that point because I hated the whole ministry scene. I thought that was absolutely idiotic.
Okay.
They just went in there without really. I mean, they did think it out, but there were so many. They thought like the minute details of it out as far as who they were going to be, but they didn't have any plan as to once they got in there what they were going to do if they got separated, which was the case that did happen. And that, you know, three seemingly not even close to being in stature the same type of people within the organization. Well, you know, it looks kind of weird to have those three people hanging out with each other. So that was not thought about very well. So a lot of the things that they do aren't thought out, but they don't really have a choice because they don't have anybody to guide
right.
them.
Right, and yeah, that's probably true. I mean, that's very true. But and also, if they would have waited any longer before they went to the ministry, it may have been, you know, February before they got to anywhere else, you know. So I guess they did have to act. You're right, Micah.
It's a plot device. It moves the
story. I know
story
it's a plot
along,
device,
yes.
But when it, exactly. but Mikey, when it screams at you, when it screams at you,
I know,
says,
I know,
device,
I know.
I am a plot device. It's just
you have to give it some leeway, guys. You gotta let it, you know, let your imagination run.
But
imagine if you were Harry. You're impatient. You're impulsive. You have a hero complex. Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, you have a saving people thing. Well, dude, like seriously, Mike. But when it is a plot device and it screams out at you and says hi. Or g'day, mate. I'm a plot device. You know, it just kind of irks me.
Now, yeah. Note number three. Is there much to discuss there, or aren't you just repeating what was said in the book? I mean, they're trying to figure out, or Harry was trying to figure out in his head.
Oh, I was questioning whether or not we actually discussed this last chapter about things being dead, not really belonging in the real world again. And you know, the guy in the story of the three brothers discovered that. And you know, Harry's really creeping Hermione out here with the talk of living with dead people. So I didn't know if we really talked about or if we wanted to talk about like if you know how things don't belong once they're dead and all the things. It's kind of a theme of the book.
Well. Why do you think it was creeping her out? I mean, maybe that's a more specific question to ask because you could look at it in a number of ways. It was creeping her out because she just didn't like the idea in general, or it was creeping her out because she thought that Harry actually may want to go and live, quote unquote, with those people who
he's
lost.
That's a good question.
Or maybe another way you can look at it is if they don't belong back on Earth, then what happens if they do come back? Are there certain side? Or are there
well,
effects?
Well, I guess it's
are
against
there...
nature. But then again, it could happen, just like Horcruxes. You know, making Horcruxes is against nature, but it can
happen.
Exist in nature. You know, it can exist.
Yeah. What are the repercussions of bringing someone back? Essentially, is what happens.
You know, Mikey.
Here.
You know what I'm thinking of right now. I can't bring people back from the dead.
Back from
it's
the
not
dead.
A pretty picture.
It's the genie!
It's the genie!
Oh, man, I love Aladdin. Oh, you ain't never had a friend like me.
That's right, man. Mikey B. That's right. I knew you'd like that.
Right.
I knew you'd like that.
Of course, dude. I
you're
love
awesome.
The
you have
Aladdin
great taste.
The genie.
So that's great. All right.
Anyway.
Okay, so another plot device here. Hermione, well, Harry is ranting a raven because he thinks he has the answer to everything. And, you know, unfortunately for us, he does. But Hermione accuses him of, you know, trying to fit everything in his real life into the story of the Deathly Hallows, which is, you know, just a fairy tale according to Hermione. So, you know, I mean, here we are as readers listening to Hermione talk about, you know, Harry trying to fit everything into the Hallows story. But at the same time, this is a book about the Deathly Hallows, and JKR has tried to weave, or she's been weaving, this crafty tale of Harry's invisibility cloak's true identity and all that sort of thing into the Hallows story. It seems like you shouldn't bite the hand that feeds you, but similarly, JKR shouldn't write Hermione complaining that Harry does something if she's doing it herself. Or, you know, do you guys feel that way, or do you think it's not that case at all?
I think it is kind of interesting that this is the first time Hermione's really just like, I really can't think of another time where Hermione was just like, Harry, you're crazy. Forget it. You know, Hermione and Ron are very set on the fact that Dumbledore told them they have to destroy their Horcruxes and that's it. Yet Harry here thinks he has everything figured out, and Hermione's just so well, against it. I don't know what
the reality of it is. Could be pretty scary. And I mean, it goes back to Hermione being scared before about Harry talking about living with the dead. You know, to me, what I saw in this chapter was that, you know, for once, it's Harry who's actually putting it together. It's not Hermione that's doing the puzzle
solving. Which is refreshing.
It is.
The fact that he could be right about this, I think, scares her more. And that may be sort of what's underlying this whole thing, is that she doesn't want to believe that he could possibly be right, because if he is, you know, the consequences are just so great.
Right. She just wants to take the safer route, or the more realistic route, I guess, right?
So you guys think it's basically bringing Harry closer to death than she's comfortable with, I guess, if he wants to do anything with these Deathly Hallows.
Right. I mean, listen to the Master of Death. Like, that's kind of creepy. Scary.
Well, there's also a part where it's like, Deathly Hallows, Horcruxes. You know, he's contemplating, what do I do? Or, you know, he's completely contemplating. And I think it comes down to, it's Harry's realization that it's not Hermione and Ron's journey. It's his. And he's either going to be there with them, but in the end, he has to make the final choice what he's going to do. And Hermione's scared. It comes down to it. You know, she's a Gryffindor and she's brave. She's done a lot of amazing things. But the only one can, you know, defeat the other. You know, it's Harry that's going to destroy Voldemort, and he has to make the decision in the end. And that's, I think, a huge reason why it was Harry putting everything together. You're and seeing from Harry's perspective heavily on this one.
And he's 7 books into it, and he knows that at every one of his stories there's a resolution. So no matter which path he took, he would have gotten out of there. Joe would have saved him. So everything was all good.
You know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of that Will Ferrell movie where it's like there's an author writing about his life. He's like, "Who's telling me what to do?"
The narrator's like, "God."
Can you imagine if Harry was really there, and then like Joe is just being like, and Harry couldn't decide whether to go through the Deathly Hallows or after the Horcruxes, and he's like, "Who's telling me what to think?" That would be great.
Well, the best line is,
"Sorry, I find
let's
that."
Let's move on to the next note.
Well, I mean, so Harry is putting things together, and JKR is. It turns out JKR has woven this tale, you know, at least from the beginning, I guess, with the invisibility cloak, but more and more recently in book 6 with Marvolo Gaunt saying that his ring, a family heirloom, you know, had the Peveril crest on it. So basically we've got this whole thing where Harry, I don't understand, Harry's kind of flipping out. He says that the ring, or the stone of the ring, is inside the snitch, which he's of course right about, but it seems awfully convenient. But at the same time, we're seeing how JKR's weaving all these things together and fitting them all into the Hallows story. So I don't know. What do you guys think about how she kind of wrote his invisibility cloak? I mean, we haven't seen any other invisibility cloaks, but in this, it's kind of clever.
No, we have.
Well, have we?
Didn't they talk about how Moody had another one, but someone else was using it?
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Well, I still think it's clever that we've been treated in a way to this invisibility cloak, which is, you know, I would call it a main character in the books. But then we didn't know that, you know, other invisibility cloaks would not fit them all as good, you know, that sort of thing. Turns out this invisibility cloak is actually really special.
Yeah, no.
Doesn't somebody comment on that, though? I mean, earlier in the books, and I forget who it was, that they hadn't seen a cloak quite like this ever before.
I wanted to say that, but I don't remember who.
It was said, though.
It was.
And I mean, I think it shouldn't come as like a surprise. Because we've always known there was something, like, haven't we really always known that there's something about the cloak?
Yeah,
I mean,
you know,
Dumbledore
even
had it. And
even
his
the way
father
he
wanted him
it.
To have it, so
yeah, it's like one of those things where it's like it just magically appears. You know, we know it's Dumbledore that gave it to him, but it's like he just magically gets this amazing gift, and Ron says, "Wow, those are really rare." You know, it's like, wow,
yeah, that too.
So it's like, so it's always been given some significance, and like the Invisibility Cloak has played a role in every book. Come on, Harry sneaks out way too much,
but the cloak has confused me because in the books. It says it's indestructible. It makes you invisible, like completely invisible. But I'm thinking, like, don't all you have to do is pull it off you, and you're not
right
invisible anymore. Like, I'm confused by how how amazing this really is. Dumbledore can make himself invisible without a cloak. So
he cannot make himself invisible. He can disillusion himself. So it's just like he can go invisible.
But he's essentially...
He's invisible, not to a very strong wizard. To a very strong wizard, like, you know, say Voldemort, he wouldn't be invisible.
Okay.
What he does is... Dumbledore cannot make himself invisible, but he's such a strong and powerful wizard that when he does a disillusionment charm on himself, it's almost like he's invisible, and it's just as good for a majority of people. Joe actually said that, I think, inside an interview, not in the book. I remember that, and I was like, that makes sense now, because I was beating myself up thinking about
that. Cool, Mikey.
Sorry. I knew that one, off the top of my head. That was great.
Cool that he was beating himself up.
Yeah, he was beating himself up about it. No, but again, we know invisibility cloaks are made from, demiguys? Demiguys' fur and stuff like that. And they wear out, it's like a fur coat, I would assume. But this, is like completely different, And didn't he describe it once, like it felt like water almost on his hands? That doesn't remind me of fur at all. So definitely you can tell now thinking about it, and this is me thinking out loud, guys, it's completely different than any other invisibility cloak.
I think you're right.
We've conveniently been left out details about other invisibility cloaks, up until kind of the very end when we find out his is special.
Okay, so next we have Harry is pretty certain that his invisibility cloak is special, that the ring stone is actually in the snitch. He makes all these assumptions that are kind of convenient. I would call them unlikely. I would call them a cheap literary technique in a way. He's right only when he absolutely needs to be, because there can't be a... because this is the part where in the book where the plot has to go forward, so Harry has to know, just like he had to know about Godric's Hollow, that sort of thing. It's just all this stuff happens, and Harry is certain that he's special and what he must do. So after he figures out what we must do, Ron interrupts them, and this is a little something that I quite enjoyed. I know you guys did too. We talked about this in London when we first read it, but J.K.R. does something really wonderful for us, or at least we think she did. Come on, Andrew. You're too humble.
It seems like a good idea on Joe's end. We're talking about Potter Watch. It seems like a good idea for them. They needed something to refresh them, to enlighten them, to give them, connect them to the outside world. A little gossip. I mean, I won't say it's needed, but you need a little comic relief.
All it proves is that it serves the story. I still think that, she not only kind of, I'm going to go out with my opinion. I think that it was kind of a nod to the literary discussion we had been doing. I mean, not just us, Pottercast and all of the other sort of Harry Potter podcasts out there. All the kinds of discussion at all in the fandom to have this Potter Watch, a radio show type thing led by some of our, favorite minor characters in the books. I think that was a direct nod, and not only that, but she improved on what we were doing with coming up with some really cool ideas or segments.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree what you're saying. It is worth mentioning that when everyone read this, we got flooded with emails. Just, oh my gosh, Joe was recognizing you guys and all the other podcasts out there with Potter Watch. I guess. It'd be nice to actually get more official word from her about it. It's a cool name, though, and as we're about to discuss, there are some.
And what's interesting, though, is that never came up. I thought maybe at Carnegie Hall that was going to be a question that was posed to her, or at least in some of the interviews that she has done since then. But surprisingly, that question was never posed to her as to where she really got the idea for Potter Watch, and if really? It was sort of a recognition of anything.
I'll be honest with you, I wasn't really impressed by all the questions that were posed to Joe after the book came out, except for the web chat. There was a lot of good stuff going on in there, but after that there weren't many interviews that were really enlightening. I'm not blaming it on Joe. I don't know who to blame it on, but frankly I want to hear more about the Veil. I want to hear more about specific topics like Potter Watch isn't the most important question, but would certainly be an interesting one, where she got the inspiration for that. But that's a side topic. I digress.
Do you think this will come up in a encyclopedia of some sort.
Maybe. I don't know. Potter Watch doesn't seem like very encyclopedic material.
Yeah. Well,
could be. Depends on how thorough she gets once she's done writing
it. Yeah.
Can we have code names, Andrew? Can we have code names?
Well, I'm Toots.
Oh, you've been Toots
since long before Book 7 came
out. You've been Toots, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to call you Tootsie.
Toots? Nah.
Yeah, we're calling you Tootsie.
Everyone says I'm pronouncing Toots wrong. It should be Toots. And technically, that's probably right, but I think half the joke is that I say Toots. So.
There's a titled episode of MuggleCast called Toots where you came up with that, right? Yeah.
Yeah, when I started, I made people starting to call me Toots and they refused. But anyway.
Okay. So let's move on with our amazing Latin decoding skills. Remus's code name is Romulus. Do you guys know why?
Yes. Romulus and Remus.
I don't know why. Why?
Why? Who were they?
Well, Eric, maybe you should tell us.
Oh, no, dude, you guessed it. You guessed Romulus was...
Well, now that I'm all worried, now I don't want to know... they're brothers, right?
Yeah.
They're brothers raised by wolves.
Raised by wolves and then forced to kill each other, right? Or
no.
Kill
Ooh,
each other.
No, maybe not. Maybe. No. Maybe? No.
I don't remember. Huh? Yeah, one of them died. They killed each other. One of them killed one of them.
They did something else really important first. They founded Rome.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. One of them. But they were the... Yeah, you're right. No, you're completely right. They were raised by wolves. They were the brothers who... or at least... I think it was Remus who named Rome after Romulus, something like that. But needless to say, they were brothers credited with the building or founding of Rome, and they were raised by wolves. So it's kind of ironic or kind of funny that Remus, his code name on this Potter watch should be Romulus, because that's kind of a direct nod to the origin of his name, or at least in popular history. So other names, though, other code names for these characters are not as clear. Kind of like Rodent. Do you guys understand Rodent as it appears to Fred or George?
I think it's sort of just like being a rat, like ratting out the truth? I don't know.
I think...
It wouldn't surprise me that Fred and George would want to be Rodent and Rapier. Rapier.
I thought it was Rapier.
Rapier. Yeah, I didn't want to say it like that, though. I don't know what you're going for.
Raper? You know, I don't...
No, a rapier is a spear. It's the sword that you use for fencing, I think.
Oh, okay.
At least that's what I thought it was.
Yeah, I'm looking it up the definition now. Yeah, that's what it is.
A
type of thrusting sword.
Yeah, so, it's the fencing type sword.
Well, it makes sense.
So they're sharp, they poke fun.
They thrust the truth at you. I don't know. It's like
they thrust the...
There's a million different reasons. Chief Death Eater was another sort of... It wasn't a nickname. Well, it was a nickname, but it wasn't one of the codenames. Of course, for Voldemort.
Yeah.
Interesting. Oh, is that for the taboo's sake, or...
Chief Death Eater? Well, I think it's a cool name for him anyway. It's better than saying, you know who this, you know who that.
Right.
He who must not be named. It's boring. Chief Death Eater. You know? It's kind of... besides, I think that's an honorable status, Chief Death Eater. He's the one who's eaten death, who's actually picked it up and eaten it with a fork and spoon.
Right.
So, that works. They also just ramble a bit about having a 16-foot-high brother. They talk about Hagrid, who's now
He's on the run.
Because he had a support Harry Potter party at his house. This is just one of the things I would like to see in a cutscene in Movie 7. I mean, I know some guys... You'll never see it, though.
Never.
But just sort of... I think they should keep up with Hogwarts before we actually get the trio going there. But that's just me. But Zeno... Lovegood is in prison. Bunch of other stuff happens. Lupin is living with Tonks again, which was comforting to me, you know, because there was that falling out with Harry. Harry feels a little bit guilty about it.
They were comforted, too. They thought it was a relief, too.
Yeah. And, okay, here's the one thing, I guess, that really made us think... or really made me think that it was a nod to us, this whole Potter Watch thing. It's because I think Lee Jordan makes the comment that someone could move faster than Severus Snape confronted with shampoo. You know, is that not a fandom joke, or has that actually been said in the books before? I think it has.
I don't think it's been said in the books before, but I remember on an episode of MuggleCast.
Top 10.
On the,
it was a top 10 thing that we did on the show.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Top 10. And then
the title was like Snape doesn't use shampoo, or it was like a statement. Snape's shampoo. I don't know.
But actually, guys, we're going to get emails if we don't say this. At least on the Marauders map, didn't it say Mooney wishes he would wash his hair the slimy git?
Oh, does it? Oh, gosh, yeah, that was so long ago.
Yeah, it was still so long ago. But so, like, there's always been a little bit of reference. But I just thought that was so much, you know, kind of fun where we've all used that joke before, you know, so that was kind of an identifier.
Right.
Know, but it was all cool. It was still cool.
So I think that's about it.
Basically.
Yeah, there was...
it's a cute...
Well, there was one thing that was said. I'm looking it up. Hold on a second.
Well, the one segment that they did do that I thought was kind of cool, that, like, I was thinking, how can we use this for our show? Pals of Potter. It's called.
And what do they do, Durian?
The question is, Romulus, do you maintain, as you have every time you've appeared on our program, that Harry Potter's still alive? So I guess it's either friends of... So when I first read it, I was like, oh, is this going to be, like, updates on Pals of Potter, or is it going to be about Potter? And apparently it's just about them supporting Potter.
It's about their own sort of support.
I think so.
This is actually in the same section. It was Lee Jordan, after Kingsley was talking about you know, to help protect all the Muggles out there, and Lee says, excellently put, Royal, and you've got my vote for Minister of Magic if we ever get out of this mess.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
So
I thought, little foreshadowing
to
Kingsley actually becoming Minister of Magic.
I like Kingsley. I really like Kingsley's actor in the movie. I really like that.
I do.
It's just because of that one line, man.
You may not like a minister, but you gotta admit, Dumbledore's got style.
It's really cool.
I love him.
Yeah.
That was the best line. I laughed out loud. That was perfect. That was so perfect. So needed in that movie.
Yeah. Well, no, that guy was also in, what was it? It's that movie with Daniel Craig, actually. It's, sorry, I'm totally dead air. Or it's either Daniel Craig or Jason Statham. It's not a... Forget it. He's in that movie,
though.
You're falling.
Yeah.
You're failing. You're falling and failing.
It's not... Layer Cake. Sorry. He's in Layer Cake, which is, it's not like Harry Potter at all. But he's a good role in that. He's a good actor. I'd like to see what else he did, but I really like the actor they cast to play Kingsley. And not just because of that line, but, you know, anyway.
Well, I think that does it for Chapter by Chapter this week.
That was easy.
Yeah.
That was easy. I won't hit the button, though. But I mean,
that was easy.
I gotta reach over. I'm all set up for something else. Can only mean one thing. It is you. If they find out who they've got, they're snatchers. They're only looking for Trunks to sell for gold. That's from next chapter, chapter 23, Malfoy Manor. Nobody excited?
Awesome.
What's up next?
I know what I'm excited for.
Make the music connection.
Yeah, I got a few here for you guys
this
week.
Total meltdown.
Oh, jeez.
Total meltdown. What?
Yeah, the music. Right, that little meow.
Oh, yeah.
It's really cool.
All right, well, for Make the Music Connection this week, got an email with some ideas. It came from Sarah, 22, of Austin, Texas, and she sent in a couple of fun things for the show, but wanted to play her ideas for songs this week because I thought they were pretty good choices, and she has explanations for all of them. So who wants to go first?
I will.
Mikey? Okay.
I'm excited. I can do this.
Here's a little classic rock for you.
There you go.
Send Her My Love by Journey.
Okay. No, I know. Journey. There's a few things I can think of this one. But you know, if we go through it, I really see this as the mirror of Erised, Harry seeing his family, not just sending her, his mom, but his whole family, his mom and dad, you know, his love. I can see it because, you know, again, you know, Dumbledore has to stop him from continuing to go there because it's what he's yearning for. And this song is about yearning for, you know, to tell someone that you love them. So,
oh, that's so sweet.
What did Sarah say, though? I'm a little... I want to know what she
connected. Sarah said, it's so perfect for Harry's feelings about Ginny when he's on his Horcrux hunt and so lonely.
No, I you know, I was going to bring that up, but that seemed like too obvious of one. You know what I mean?
Don't hurt our listeners.
No, but Sarah, it made perfect sense. And I really like the song because, again, the song could be used for multiple things in it. You know,
yeah,
definitely the Harry and Ginny thing. That's, you know, that's standard there. But I like the idea that it can go back all the way back to the first book and the Mirror Erised.
I like that, Mikey.
All right, Eric, I think this next song probably works best for you. No one told you life was gonna be this way. Your job's a joke, you broke. I'll Be There for You by The Remembrance, made famous by Friends, of course.
This is not just the theme from Friends, Andrew. This is also the theme from the DA. This is Dumbledore's army theme, because you know that they are loyal to each other. Every time, I mean, Harry can't stop them from coming up to him and being like, how can we help? You know, Neville and Luna, man, they are there for him, you know? They are there for him. That's amazing, man. This is a DA theme because they're all into that. They all fight battles together, and you know they deal with it all. Yeah, it's the DA theme. I'm thinking particularly of Neville's loyalty, but mostly the whole DA is really, you know, they were a good group of friends.
All right, fair enough. I like that.
Very cool.
What does she say?
Just picture that, like the Friends intro being redone to the
With them in front of the fountain. Yeah, totally.
Right. Or yeah, it's just a room requirement, a cafe and a room requirement.
Well, I have a lot to live up to now. Those were two really good.
But Micah,
explanation.
Well, you're Micah.
What
you're
did she say? What did she say in the email, Andrew?
Her idea was is a great trio theme song. So yeah, I mean
Friends. Yeah,
you matched her pretty well. All right, so Micah, you're next here. Confess, could make me love you less. I'll stand by you. I'll stand by you. Wanna know why you have you. I'll stand by you. I'll stand by you by the Pretenders.
And I would have to say this is when all the ghosts surround Harry and he's walking into the forest.
Okay.
Wow.
Oh, that's so sweet. Aww. I love picturing these and thinking like they're amazing. That's a good one.
So,
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Her idea was is good for Harry and Ginny or Hermione and Ron. I like your idea better, Mike. I have to be honest. That would make me cry. I'm tearing up just thinking about it.
Yeah. You know, the antithesis of this song is Don't Stand So Close to Me by Sting. You know, but...
Is it really?
Another good song.
I don't even know what that word means.
You know, I like Sting and the Police. I really do.
They're really good. Shout out to Sting and the Police.
The Police. Message in a bottle. I love you. Anyway.
Because we'll wrap this up today with voicemails. You guys want some voicemails? I only have four this week. I won't torture you with seven.
Like we tortured Jim Dale, or we almost
did. Yeah, he was getting pissed.
Sorry.
He was about to do his Voldemort impression on you.
Yeah. Let's take the first one.
Hi. Hi, MuggleCast. My name is Kincaid Rabb, and I'm calling from Phoenix, Arizona. I just wanted to point out something about the name Xenophilius Lovegood. Xeno in Latin means foreigner, hence xenophobia, fear of foreigners. So that's probably what J.K. Rowling meant when she made the name Xenophilius
Lovegood. Like bowling.
Just wanted to point out that, and And, well, bye.
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 Oh, hey, that's good.
If the end part of that email was the best.
Coming from, coming from Latin, if you are a xenophiliac, you love foreign things. You love weird stuff.
Right.
Never put that together.
No, I think it's a good point. I mean, I probably have yet to update the name origin section with him, since I haven't updated it in over a year.
Tisk, Micah,
you're working so hard.
But anyway, yeah, I mean, even if you think about xenophobia, you know, fear of foreigners, and I think that would suit him pretty good, because he's kind of the oddball and doesn't really fit in with
anybody.
He
likes weird stuff.
Yeah.
So does Aberforth, but I mean,
jeez, Micah, you always need to make an Aberforth connection.
His name just doesn't happen to be xenophilia.
Yeah.
He's a goat.
Say no more.
So I have a question. What is with Aberforth and the goat, guys? I really never put it together.
He's just a weirdo.
That question was asked at Carnegie Hall too, and Joe didn't do too good of a job.
Joe did not touch that with a 39 and a half foot pole.
No, she did, but she just couldn't find the right word. She was cracking
up. J.K. Rowling said, she said, "How old are you?" And she said, the girl who was asking the question, I guess she said 9 or 10. And J.K. Rowling said, she gave some, like, you know, elementary answer.
Oh, come on. That was the best answer.
That's all you need to know.
That was the best answer ever.
It was funny, yeah. Yeah.
So, I'm still confused.
He loves goats. Aberforth loves the goat. We'll leave it there.
I think it's the horns.
He's charmed by the goat.
Hey, do you guys hear that sound?
No.
It's the sound of another voicemail!
Hey, MuggleCasters, this is Melissa M., age 17, from New Jersey. I just wanted to comment on your taboo discussion. I don't know, I saw the taboo less of a reason to find those against Voldemort and more of a way to keep the fear.
I don't think she intended for this voicemail to be played, because that's how she ended the voicemail, by going,
That was good unison there, Andrew. We both with the blahs together.
Yeah.
Blah. Yeah.
But what do you think? I like her idea. She's saying that the taboo was more to just scare people in general, not to enforce anything.
No.
I'm not going to comment on that, because that's too much into current politics here in the U.S., and I don't want to start a big old discussion.
Wow. No, I completely disagree. I think the taboo was to find people. People aren't going to say the name Voldemort unless they are those kinds of people. So it's not to scare people. You couldn't pay people to say that name before it was a taboo, you know, unless they were members of the Order of Phoenix. The taboo thing was strictly so you could locate people who did say the name, or to locate the opposition to Voldemort, because they were the only ones who were going to consciously speak his name. So it is all about finding people.
Yeah, I completely agree with Eric. I kind of disagree with the voicemail. I don't think it has anything to do with a fear aspect of it, because, as he said, the people were afraid to say the name before, so they're certainly not going to say it now. The only people who are brave enough to speak his name are the people that Voldemort himself are after. So it was a way of making sure that they could track them down.
I guess. There's only one thing that could solve this question.
Another voicemail.
Correct!
Hey, MuggleCast. This is Elliot from good old Minnesota. Okay, I don't really talk like that. I had a question about your listeners.
Yes, he does.
I've noticed that most of your listeners are girls. And I wanted to know what you thought about that. As a guy listening to MuggleCast, I have no idea why this would be. Okay, maybe I do, but that's a totally different story. I also wanted to thank you all for everything you do. I love the show, and I can't imagine my life without MuggleCast. I know, try not to cry. Aww. Oh, and Andrew, Laura, Matt, Micah, Jamie, Eric, Ben, Kevin, Mikey, and Elisa are my favorites. Okay, thanks. Bye.
I wonder if it's in that order.
Well, it was like seven.
Yeah,
you
said my name first, so.
It's all right, Eric. I'm at the end, too.
Yeah, that sucks, man.
Anyway, what do you guys think? I mean, I think it's a pretty good question.
What did he
have?
You know what, guys? I think I'm the only one that was a listener. You guys were all hosts from the beginning. So, I think it's weird, you know, when you're a male listener to MuggleCast. It really is, because I remember I'm the only guy I knew listening to it for the longest time.
When I have this little thing, when I do meet the guy listeners at the live shows, I shake their hand and I say thank you, because it takes a lot of guts to come out to a live show knowing full well there's going to be a ton of crazy fangirls. Not saying it's not a bad idea to maybe find a girl that you would like, but, you know, it. Most guys wouldn't go for that. I mean, they come to, you know, meet us and hear us do a discussion. So I have to give them a lot of credit for coming out there.
Yeah. And also, you know, it's the same thing with the conventions. The conventions are predominantly female also.
Oh, there's a so glad you brought that up, because that relates to our next voicemail. But
yeah, no, it's one of those things where I honestly, like, I first met Andrew and Eric at Lumos. I don't remember if you were there, Micah. I don't think I met you there.
No, I was not.
Okay, yeah. I didn't think I met you there. I was pretty sure I didn't meet you there. But that's when I first met you guys, and you guys were probably, like, what, 50 episodes in? I remember listening to, like, an episode while driving up there. I drove up to Vegas on my own. I was like, you know what? I have a cheap hotel, not at the same hotel. And I figured, I'm like, if this thing is totally lame and I'm totally, like, a weirdo for liking Harry Potter and I'm the only guy that I know that does, I'll just hang out in Vegas. I'm 21. I'll party it up.
There you go.
I was like, I'll just party it up. And I ended up having a great time. I met, you know, you guys. And, you know, you guys thought I was pretty cool. And I'm somehow now on the show. So.
And even I listened to the first episode of MuggleCast. And then I said, this is shit. I need to talk to them and tell them what they need to do.
Oh.
No.
You know, Micah, it's all right. Just tell Andrew how much you really hated the first few episodes. Like, I remember, you know, they got, you know, MuggleCast got pulled because they were just so bad. iTunes said, we don't like you.
No, wait.
I remember that. I know. I thought this is not what happened, Andrew.
No, we didn't get pulled because of the quality of the show. iTunes, for some reason, thought we were in violation of some copyright or something. They pulled MuggleCast and Pottercast.
Oh, yeah.
We know which podcast is the better podcast. But the point is, they didn't pull us because of being bad. I could give you a million podcasts out there that are terrible. Not any Harry Potter podcasts. They're all good. But
I know. No, Andrew, I said that to get a rise out of you.
I know you did.
Yeah, so did I. I mean, but I did listen to the first episode before, you know, I contacted Kevin and ended up working here. Yeah. But, I mean, you know, I don't know. I can't really say that I would have – I guess it's impossible to answer if I would have listened beyond, you know, I guess maybe Deathly Hallows. I don't know.
But back to his original question, why are there so many girls that listen to the show?
Guys, it's obvious.
Are there do that many more girls read Harry Potter than guys?
I think so.
Well, that's true too.
Or do many more girls have iPods than guys? That sort of thing.
Why does Harry Potter appeal to girls? So much more than guys.
Dan Radcliffe.
You know, I don't know that it does. And here's the reason why. Because even at work, I mean, my boss reads it.
But there are exception cases. I mean,
No. But I think probably there are a lot more who do read it who just don't publicize it as much. You know, because maybe it's not looked upon as being something that's, you know,
masculine,
cool, or yeah. Exactly. And that's completely not true. But you know, maybe that's the reason why. But I mean, you go on a train after one of the books are released, and you know, it doesn't matter where you look, there are people reading Harry Potter. You know, streets of New York, people sitting on benches. It doesn't matter if it's a guy or a girl; they're reading the book, and maybe, I don't know, maybe the girls are just more prone to getting involved in a fandom.
No, it's not true. You know, this fandom is predominantly female, and I haven't been able to figure out exactly why Harry Potter is predominantly female. Like, when you compare it to other fandoms like the Star Trek, I'm not a Star Trek fan at all, but or Star Wars, which are pretty male-dominated fandoms. Hmm. You know what I mean? Those are big fandoms, but they're pretty male-dominated. This fandom is predominantly female, and the only thing I can think of is fan fiction is definitely geared more towards females than male.
Well, fan fiction is a good outlet for that kind of period in their lives.
And also when you look at the conventions, again, they're predominantly female, and a lot of those topics relate to fan fiction and that sort of stuff.
I also think the movies play a big role, because Star Wars, you have a couple attractive actors. What other fandom? Lord of the Rings, you have a couple attractive actors. But it seems with the Harry Potter films, there are many more attractive main actors. And when you go to these premieres, you see all these crazy screaming girls. And that's why I'm thinking, in the actual hardcore fans, there are more girls, because more girls love swooning over Dan Radcliffe, Tom Felton, Rupert Grint. The list can go on. So I think the movies do play a role.
You know,
and the
definitely.
Books are, and who would like magic more, guys or girls? I mean,
well,
guys are technically more.
I don't know.
Guys tend to be more techno geared in the sense of like technology.
Actually, though, aren't guys more fantasy writers or fantasy readers than girls? Has that been proven?
I don't think that's true. I think guys are more science fiction and girls are more
fantasy aspect of it. Yeah, okay.
Yeah
but see,
and again, that's
to do
with the technology thing, because like if you look at all those gifts for Valentine's Day or Christmas, guys, gifts for him, which are all like tech and gadgets, and gifts for her, which are more like, you don't really find gadgets on those lists.
Well, Mikey,
yeah, you don't find those things.
Well, Mikey, you're right. And what you're saying with the techno thing, I think, and what I want to say is that I think it's brilliant how to address this kind of a question, because we're talking about how most of our audience is female. The Harry Potter fandom is predominantly female, all that. But yet we're a podcast which has 9 men and 2 girls, you know, because
how many girls are on this show?
What?
Well, not today.
Laura,
but
I know Laura's gone. I'm sorry. I had to pick on Laura.
Oh, right.
She was supposed
okay.
to be here.
But
Laura was supposed to be here today.
Laura and Elisa are the only girls who've like basically ever, you know, who do this show. And we have all these guys. And, you know, that might be because, like you're saying, Mikey, about the techno thing, how we're all doing this, how it all started through a website. But I think it's incredibly interesting that we see and we question why the fandom is predominantly female. We should actually kind of be questioning why our podcast, which represents the fandom, is so predominantly male.
It's the same connection I made with the movies. I'm not going
to
jump out there and say...
Are you saying you're dreamy, Andrew? Are you trying to say you're dreamy?
I'm trying to... Well, I already know that I'm dreamy.
Yeah, I know you are.
What I'm trying to say is I think guys discussing Harry Potter...
Turn girls
is
on?
...is more of interest to girls... than girls listening to girls discuss. Maybe I'm completely wrong, because there's no really all-girl podcast, so
well, yeah.
I don't know.
The point that you're making, though, is interesting, because all you have to do is look at the amount of hate mail that Laura
That's
gets.
That's true, too.
You know, that strengthens your point. But I think there's also appeal, you know, to guys to go see the Harry Potter movies, because you have Emma Watson, you have Clemens Posey.
Oh, man, she's so hot. Oh, man, dude. Oh, Eric.
God, you had to mention her, Micah. I mean, wow. Okay. No, but you're right. And, yeah. Well, I mean, we've all handled Laura's hate mail, right? I mean, we've all...
Well, hold on. Wait a second.
I mean, come
Laura's
on.
Not going to appreciate this. She doesn't get that much hate mail.
Well, we're talking about from girls who don't want to hear
right.
other
she
girls.
She gets hate mail from girls on occasion, and we think it's just because she's a girl. And
no,
our theory is, we've never really said this on the show before, but our theory is that the girls send in hate mail to Laura because she's a girl and they want to be on the show talking to us.
Well,
not
yeah,
Laura.
Or they don't, or maybe you're right, Andrew, when you first said, you know, that girls don't really want to hear exactly what other girls have to say as much as they might want to hear what other guys have to say about something they love. That might be the whole kind of psychology behind a fangirl movement, too. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, hey, I'm sure listeners have some really good ideas about why more girls listen. I'm sure some girls would like to get their opinion in on it, because, you know, that's kind of important,
yeah,
too, in this discussion. So send in your emails, maybe send in a couple voicemails, and we'll address them
next week.
It's
just interesting, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, what Mikey was saying before, the technical side of it, too, because, I mean, that's really why I got involved with this thing, was because, hey, they're doing a podcast, and it's kind of like a, you know, it's kind of like a radio. It is a
radio,
show. I mean,
and Mikey, you used to do radio, so...
Yeah, so I'm like, you know what, this is cool. At the time, I had just, I think, finished reading the 5th book, or at the time it was the 6th book, but, you know, I had read all 5 others the previous summer, so it wasn't like something that I had been involved in since the series had started, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
And honestly?
And that's how I got into it, too. You know, you guys were impressed with my knowledge of, you know, technical stuff and my working for a certain company, and... They're like, could you do a podcast, you know, if we need someone in? I'm like, yeah, not a problem. And sure enough, I came back multiple times.
And extending on that technical idea, I'll be honest, I love radio more than I do Harry Potter, but I'm really passionate about radio. It's what I want to do in the
same
future.
Same thing with me and film.
I don't want to do Harry Potter in the future. That's just weird. But I mean that in the literal sense. Take it the way you want. But I don't want to do Harry Potter. I'm sorry. I don't want to do Harry Potter.
Not
sorry,
now,
Harry.
Not 5 years ago, and not in the future.
Never did, never will. He's just not my type. But radio is my type.
He's not cuddly enough.
So, I do the MuggleCast. I do love MuggleCast for the radio aspect. I do love Harry Potter. I do love the fans. I love talking to Harry Potter fans.
This is like the most thought-provoking voicimail ever.
I know. Well, let's move on.
Let's move on. Seriously.
So, there will be more discussion next week, I'm sure. Final voicemail for today.
Hey, MuggleCast. This is Brittany. I was wondering if you're planning on going to Infinitus 2010 in Orlando, Florida. I've never been to a conference or convention because no one I know is interested in going. If you go alone, is it still worth it? And I don't want to go and be by myself the whole time because that would be sad. And also, do you need to stay at a hotel because I live in Orlando? All right, you guys are awesome. Bye.
This poor girl, she wants to go to a Harry Potter conference in Phineas. It's going to be right around the time when the theme park is opening. And she wants to know, can she go by herself?
I did.
Mikey did.
How old will she be?
Oh, why? Why do you want to know that?
No. I'm just saying.
Oh, Michael, why?
There are serious restrictions because if she's young enough, she will need a chaperone. But otherwise,
All right.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where all of us here on MuggleCast are completely approachable. You know, I just went up to Andrew and said, "Hey, you're Andrew Sims," and I saw Eric walking around in his costume in his wizard costume at Lumos. I have a picture with Eric. You know, I was like, "Hey, can I get a picture with you?" Dude, I have a full costume too, man.
It's a uniform.
All right. Hey, dude, Eric, I not only have the robe, but I also have a cloak also, and I have like four sweaters. I know. I'm all about it too.
So is it a costume or a uniform?
It's an outfit. It's an outfit. It's my clothes. It's my wizard clothes. So it's one of those things where it's definitely okay to go by yourself. But again, I went with the mindset of I'm going to be open, I'm going to make friends, I'm going to have fun, and if all else fails, you know, whatever, I'm in Vegas. For you, you live in Orlando, go, you know, it's going to be, you know, it does cost like $180 usually for like the pass for the days and all that. You know, you spend the money, and if you absolutely hate it the first day, second day, don't go. You live there in Orlando. But truthfully, you know, I can't say for sure because that's a long way ahead whether I'll be there or not, depending on work and different things, but all of us are approachable. We all love Harry Potter. It's one of those things. It's a gathering of people that have
right.
We all like Harry Potter. Go like, "Hey, do you like Harry Potter?" And you can start a conversation. It's not hard.
Exactly. You don't need a hotel to answer the second part of her question, for starters. I mean, especially if you live there, you could just drive there each day. I mean, but then you're paying for parking. That might add up. I guess your parents could drop you off at the hotel. Yeah,
well,
you will make friends at the Harry Potter conference, without a doubt.
Absolutely.
You enter this world. You enter this Harry Potter fandom crazy world. You will guaranteed meet so many new people, and you will meet people that I will bet will become lifelong friends. And I'm not kidding. I mean, we've all made lifelong friends through Harry Potter. And I think anyone who goes to these conferences has lifelong friends through Harry Potter, and it's thanks to these conferences.
Now, exactly. So. Now, my advice would be this is Infinitus is an HPF event, is it not? Yes. So what they have, and this is completely my advice, is they have forums. They have discussion forums. They have exactly this sort of thing where if you can, if you join or you sign up, I don't even know if you have to be in the forums, but you meet people, and that's exactly what you do. You say, you know, here I am, and I'm you know, so and so, and I really enjoy Harry Potter. I'll be going to Infinitus, and you meet people through the boards. Now this can be done months before Infinitus. You can meet people online, and what'll happen is they do this so that eventually, I mean, people could be roommates. You know, you find potential roommates if it is an odd number of you, or if you were the only one going, and you find all these, you know, sort of Harry Potter friends through the fandom, through the internet, that you're gonna then meet up with in thing. And I mean, living in Orlando, you might meet some people who want to use you and crash at your place. Be aware of this.
Any wizard rock band would like a free, you know, floor to crash on.
So they might want to crash at your place. Do not let them unless you trust them.
Because this recording's really long. We need to wrap this up.
Okay, but basically my advice is you can meet people through the forums months ahead of time, and I think it's a brilliant way to do it. And I wouldn't be too terribly worried about none of your other friends wanting to go. You could try and convince them, but you could also find there's so many other nice people out there in this fandom.
Truthfully, you'll probably have more fun if you go alone than with one of your friends, because what's going to happen is they're probably not going to want to be there, and they would drag you down in the sense that they don't want to hang out with all the Harry Potter people, don't want to go to the different things.
Right.
Go and have fun. You know what I mean?
HPEF.net is actually their website, and they have forums there. You can just click on Infinius right there, and it doesn't look like the forum is too active right now, but hey, if you post, you never know. Yeah. Someone will bite.
Things 2 years away.
We just have one more piece of news we wanted to bring up really quickly before we finish the show tonight. It's actually the news came out about a couple hours ago before we started recording, and that was that Dame Maggie Smith is battling breast cancer. So, of course, we just want to send our best wishes out to Maggie and her family.
Definitely, yeah. It's a shame. It's a shame. But in the interview, she said that she insisted on filming her scenes, even though she was still going through chemotherapy. So,
yeah,
that's something. Her radiation therapy. Sorry.
Yeah.
So.
Well, she has such a good role in the book. She's really a good actress, and she's really devoted to it. And you know, our hearts go out to her. I mean, I really respect that she still wants to, you know, wants to do her scenes and stuff in the movie as long as she can. That's really great of her.
Yeah, well, well said, Eric.
Hey, Micah, if someone wants to send in parcel mail, do you know where they send that?
Yeah, it goes to P.O. Box 3151 Cumming, Georgia. Is it 30028?
It is.
I remembered, finally.
Yay.
Got it.
You can also...
I'm not even looking at that website. That you are right
now. Laura's mom.
If you want to be featured in an upcoming episode of MuggleCast through a voicemail, we have a couple phone numbers you might want to know. If you're in the United States, you can dial 1-218-20-MAGIC. If you're in the United Kingdom, you can dial 020-814-0677. And if you're in Australia, you can dial 02-8003-5668. You can also Skype the username MuggleCast. No matter how you call us, just remember to keep your message under 60 seconds and eliminate as much background noise as possible, please. You can also visit the MuggleCast website for a contact feedback form to contact any one of us, or you can use our first name at staff.mugglenet.com. Don't forget to visit MuggleCast.com for a variety of community outlets as well, including our MySpace, our Facebook, our YouTube, our Frapper, our Last Event, our Fate Listing Forums, and take the show at Tick.com and vote for us once a month at Podcast Alley. So I think that's about it.
Next week we'll do a better job of explaining all these community outlets. I know we did it on the Lost episode a little bit, but... we have all these things, and sometimes people don't know what they are.
So, what is this Lost episode? When did you guys do this?
We recorded it for the Jim Dale episode, but then we decided it didn't... It lacked
Flair.
Goodness, and I just decided that episode should focus just on Jim Dale and nothing else.
Oh, cool.
But that episode will probably be released to Pickle Pack fans sometime in the near future.
Now, Pickle Pack is ending within a month or two.
Yeah, it's ending soon.
Yeah.
It's coming to an end.
I haven't done it in 3 weeks. Anyway, I do need to get on that, and I will.
All right, well, that does do it for this week's episode of MuggleCast. Apologies to J.K. Rowling, but we are out of time. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Eric Skull.
I'm Mike Tannenbaum.
And I'm Mikey B.
We'll see everyone next week for episode 139. Maybe J.K. Rowling will be on that one. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys. I'm Mikey B.
Dude, what happened?
I don't know. Where's Eric?
The invisible boy.
He said I'm Eric Skull.
Oh, did he? I totally was like,
oh,
waiting
sorry,
for
dude.
Him to say.
Oh, no. That's courtesy. I'm going to say it again because I thought I said it too fast.
I didn't even hear it.
No, it was fine. It was fine, Eric.
I'm Eric Skull.
Then can I do a good Mikey B?
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'm Mikey B.
I'm
Mikey B. Yeah, there we go. All right. Sorry. I was like waiting for Eric and I didn't hear it at all.
Oh, yeah, it's all right. All right, so, Micah, you're next here.
Hopefully
this plays. I haven't tested
Andrew.
Oh, this is a great song, by the way, and I really think that it fits.
The somber
it's
tone.
To be playing.
Yeah, I think I can help you out with this one right now, Micah. I see this, at the end of the movie when the lights on the theater go back on.
This was when I stopped reading when I was done with the book. This is the song that played.
Well, no, see, then I heard crickets because it was just like, what do I do now?
It was like, what am I going to do now with my life?
This audio file is straight up empty. Hold on, I'll just load it up in iTunes real quick. Hold on.
Oh, yeah.
Though it's going to be a preview.
Who cares? It's all right. 30 seconds is all we need.
Yeah.
Andrew Sims.
Good old iTunes. I should have tested it. I downloaded
Wait,
these last minute.
Andrews, I have a question. How did you purchase it from iTunes if it's empty?
Right.
Quit trying to back him into a corner and admitting that he doesn't pay for anything.